Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's grown to hate you. She's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
That's almost 52 years so far. The world has become a worse and worse place. Every year we have polluted more water than the year before. Every year there's been less clean air than there was the year before that. Every year there are fewer species on the planet than the year before that. We're driving 200 species a day to extinction. We're about to see that turn around. The loving planet is about to make a comeback. And that's really, really good news.
She bats last and she's coming out swinging. She bats last and she's just about taking all that she can take. And it's payback time, motherfuckers, it's payback time. I said it's payback time, motherfuckers, it's payback time. For the strip mine plans, for the another dead species, for GMO, for uranium ore, for screwing your kids for a few dollars more. Now it's payback time, motherfuckers, it's payback time.
The living planet is about to make a comeback. The living planet is about to make a comeback. The living planet is about to make a comeback. And that's really, really good news.
Welcome to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM. This August 18th, 2015 edition, episode 51 of Nature Bats Last, comes live from Guy in the Mud Hut. I'm going solo today. I'm looking forward to co-hosting with Mike Sleva next week when we interview anarcho-primitivist John Zerzan. A theme song is provided as a gift with our thanks by Aphrazin. You can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com. Here's a statement from Aphrazin about his song we like to read every now and then. Quote, in my journey toward the Dabda stages of grief, regarding my understanding and expectation of what is to come in terms of anthropomorphic climate change, this song expresses my time in the first A, anger. With time and reflection, I've made it through to the second A, acceptance, and my position regarding my lyrics has changed. They made sense when my assumptions were, one, that humanity and nature are separate, two, that humanity is committing crimes against nature, and three, that humanity will be punished for doing so. My thinking now is that, one, I don't see a fundamental distinction between our species and the rest of nature, and two, humanity is behaving exactly in accordance with its evolved genetic imperatives to survive, thrive, and multiply today, regardless of the consequences tomorrow. I think my lyrics' vitriolic theme and tone are misplaced, and I suspect the song's effect might possibly be to either foster or reinforce anger and bitterness in listeners. These are natural and appropriate emotions when first waking up to the predicament we are in, as I understand it. But in my personal experience, anger and bitterness are unhelpful and detrimental if not worked through and overcome. The upsides of this new perspective for me are greater compassion and tolerance for my fellows, greater peace of mind and general happiness. I can only wish the same for others who are going through this, end quote. Me too, Aprazin. Me too. We might have time for a call or two today. Please stay tuned. Fingers ready to dial 888-874-4888. The number is under the About tab at the PRN.fm website. And again, that's 888-874-4888. Today I'll be interviewing Reverend Billy from the Church of Stop Shopping. The Reverend's persona grew out of work supervised by his teacher, Sidney Lanier, in the mid-1990s. The ministry of a new kind of American preacher debuted on the sidewalk at Times Square in 1998 in front of Disney and Mickey Mouse, the Antichrist. Billy noticed that when he was rocking, a group near him would begin to clap. Thus was born the choir for the Church of Stop Shopping. Now many devils and justice campaigns later, those early campaigns against chain stores and sweatshop products are still present in Reverend Billy's work. The imperialism of dreams that is marketed so brutally by Disney goes on in the work of resistance against Starbucks, Walmart, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Monsanto. After the storms of Katrina and Rita in 2005, Reverend Billy became an earth radical with Savitri, his wife, and also with the choir. The satire has faded in recognition that preservation of living planet demands that we stop more than shopping. Reverend Billy has a weekly radio show on WBAI in Manhattan. He's a writer and public speaker, and you can find more of his work at his website, revbilly.com. And normally, I would say welcome to the show at this point, but it seems that the Reverend is delayed, no doubt out doing great work of his own. So I'm going to start with my climate summary and update. You can find all this information, as usual, at the long climate summary and update that is provided at Nature Back Last. So let's start with some information that's a month old. I can't keep up for at least two reasons. First, I'm a one-man band, and I can't possibly read every climate change publication every week. Second, and most importantly, of course, my brain is two sizes too small, so there's no way I can keep up, synthesize, and integrate the information that does come across my computer screen. So here we are back in July 2015. We're reported Skeptical Science, that's skepticalscience.com, was titled, quote, Explaining How the Water Vapor Greenhouse Effect Works. This paper documents the impact of the most abundant greenhouse gas in the atmosphere, water vapor, and concludes, quote, water vapor feedback roughly doubles the amount of warming caused by CO2. So if there is a 1 degree C change caused by CO2, the water vapor will cause the temperature to go up another 1 degree C. When other feedback loops are included, the total warming from a potential 1 degree C change caused by CO2 is, in reality, as much as 3 degrees C, end quote. I've added this information onto feedback number 39. I'll point out that we're about 1 degree Celsius above baseline right now, and we've recently begun the process of abrupt climate change. On July 29th, 2015, Michael Mann, climate scientist at Pennsylvania State University, accepted the work of James Hansen and colleagues that concludes climate change has gone exponential. Mann continued this interview, subsequently posted at bradblog.com, that's bradblog.com, and he continued this interview with a mix of fantasy-inspired hope and very conservative reality, but ultimately he agreed that climate change has hit the tipping point, indicating exponential change. From Benjamin the Donkey comes the following limerick, which I found on Facebook. It's relevant to the climate change situation, and it's titled The New Normal. It goes like this. Fires in forests, we've learned, have increased, and we should be concerned. But to not misinform, it's only the norm until all the trees there have burned. The August 10th, 2015 issue of Newsweek has an article headlined, National Geographic has redrawn its atlas because of the melting Arctic. In the 15 years between 99 and 2014, Arctic ice extent declined by about two-thirds. It's not getting any better either in the time since the map was made. This is the biggest change in the atlas since the Soviet Union broke up. Lest we believe our profoundly large geographic distribution grants us the ability to avoid extinction, the title of an article in the August 1st, 2015 issue of Nature Communications sets the record straight. Quote, geographic range did not confer resilience to extinction in terrestrial vertebrates at the end-Triassic crisis, end quote. The study refers to a mass extinction event of about 201 million years ago and points out that there is no particular advantage afforded a species capable of occupying many different locations. That's us. The senior author of the paper was asked during an interview, will the same rule apply to species alive today, including our own? His response, there are disquieting parallels. He went on to say absurdly, quote, most of the world's population is still heavily dependent on the natural world for food, water, and energy, end quote. Most? Really? Who is immune? Who is immune from being heavily dependent on the natural world for food, water, and energy? Oh, that's right. For some of us, food comes from the grocery store, so we don't need to worry about that. Water comes through the tap, so we don't need to worry about that. But most of the world's population is still dependent upon the natural world. Whew. A paper published August 12, 2015 is titled, quote, new study finds Earth's core will be most habitable part of the planet by 2060, end quote. The senior author of the paper says, quote, the most favorable conditions for supporting human life will be located roughly 3,200 miles below the Earth's surface atop its superheated central sphere of iron and nickel, end quote. The paper was published in The Onion. At least this humor was intentional, unlike the interview resulting from the paper I mentioned in Nature Communications. Finally, an August 20th, 2015 report at boingboing.net is headlined, quote, Canadian government orders scientists not to disclose extent of polar melting, end quote. The crackdown on science continues, and this is exactly what we would expect as the police state ratchets up. And believe me, the police state is ratcheting up. Again, we might have time for a call or two today. Right now, though, Reverend Billy has joined us. Welcome to Nature Bath Blast on Progressive Radio Network, Reverend Billy. Apparently Reverend Billy has not joined us yet. So let's go instead to audio from a YouTube clip. This is a sample sermon from Reverend Billy, which our listeners can find on YouTube under the title, quote, Extinction, Resurrection, Revolt of the Golden Toads, Reverend Billy in San Francisco, 4/2013, end quote. It's from April 2013, and it was conducted in the San Francisco branch of Chase Bank. So studio can play the audio from that YouTube clip. We'll get a nice introductory sermon from the Reverend.
We'll educate you, take our research, find out what the money here is doing, find out what Chase does with its investments. You can find a better job, sir, or you can change this bank. You can get rid of Jamie Dimon. Children, it's time that we go through a radical change so the earth can save us. Jamie Dimon is the devil. Take your money out of Chase. We have. Many people will. Oh, feels good. Did that feel good, Toad children? Wow.
Well, that's an introductory sermon, a short sermon from the Reverend Billy that you can find at YouTube. Again, if you search under Extinction, Resurrection, Revolt of the Golden Toads, that was posted in April 2013, so just over a couple of years ago. And now, anticipating the Reverend's arrival, I'd like the studio to play the audio from a YouTube clip called The Gratitude Song. This was posted just a few days ago on Billy Talen's YouTube channel. Billy Talen is the name for Reverend Billy. That's his other voice. So if we could hear that little bit of music from the choir, that would be a nice place to start us off.
Yes. Many long days, many long nights, days spent standing, days spent sitting, tired feet, light soul, days spent meeting, light soul, tired feet, many long days, many long nights, days spent winning. Days spent losing, sad news, happy news. Days spent talking, nights spent talking. Happy news, sad news. Bring me a friend, bring me a stranger.
Girls in the girls' pods of the Pima County Juvenile Detention Facility. And he started by introducing himself very briefly and then asking the question, what do you suppose is the most common street sign that is stolen? And one of the 15-year-old girls pipes up immediately, I know that one because I have it too. It's Stoner Boulevard. Yes, now you know why she was in detention. And the director of transportation immediately loosened his tie and sat down. He could tell where this was going. And where it was going was exactly the direction he didn't expect. I went on to tell two more stories from my youth. I grew up in a small town in northern Idaho called Weipe, famous only because of Ken Burns and his documentary series, in particular the one about the Corps of Discovery. The Corps of Discovery first met the Nez Perce Indians on the Weipe Prairie, and the small town of Weipe, population 713 when I was growing up there, grew up there on the Weipe Prairie, no doubt as a result of the abundant water and the beautiful countryside and the ability of the Nez Perce to grow food there. When I was growing up there, in one of the gravel roads that was popularly used by the locals, there was a culvert put in, and as a result, there was a dip in the road. And so for about a week, there was a sign that said dip. And everybody in town knew it was coming, but they didn't know it would be so specific, because this was northern Idaho in the late 1960s. Somebody was going to write on that sign, dipshit. You just knew they were, because the sign said dip, and somebody had a can of spray paint. But they didn't stop there. Whoever modified the official sign, dip, actually sprayed in, Randy Swift is a dipshit. Initially, I thought that was funny, and then I thought, Randy Swift is going to catch the guy who did that, and he's going to beat him up, because that's the kind of guy he was. My final story is from the high school in that little area. We had a consolidated high school between the towns of Weipe and Pierce, Idaho. And at the time, there were 350 or so students there, grades 9 through 12. And our big rival was in Orofino, Idaho, just down the hill. And in an indication of how politically incorrect was that time, and still is for that matter, our big rival was in Orofino, Idaho, and their mascot was the Maniacs. And they were the Orofino Maniacs because the high school, Orofino High School, was right across the street from the State Idaho North Hospital for the Mentally Ill. So there you have it. Orofino Maniacs came into being because they were right across the street from the State Hospital for the Mentally Ill. And they still have that name, by the way. Every few years, a bunch of people chime in and say, you know, it's really horrible to have as our mascot the Maniacs. And the painting on the gymnasium wall at the time, and probably still is, a short person with his hair sticking all up, and he's screaming, his arms and legs flailing. He's clearly a mentally deranged person. Anyway, the best part of this story, yes, it actually gets better. The best part of the story is that every year before the big football game, we would go down, a bunch of us from the high school, and we would change the signs. We would move the State Hospital North sign from one side of the road over and have it mark Orofino High School, and have Orofino High School, home of the Maniacs, have that sign be placed instead in front of the State Hospital for people who aren't quite all there. Of course, this is horrible, and it was an indication of the time that we would not only be allowed, but in a way encouraged to participate in this sort of horrible activity. Yeah, I think it's still horrible to this day that Orfino hasn't changed their mascot from the Maniacs, and that they continue to make fun of the people in the mental facility right next door. But on the other hand, I no longer live in the world of should, and so I don't expect people to change the way they're doing things strictly because of the way things should be. Again, the number if you want to call in is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And you can find that number under the About tab that runs across the page at the PRN.FM website. There's a series of tabs up there. One of them says About. You scroll down, you can find the number 888-874-4888. Thank you for the rescue, Lily from Arizona. Please, ask me anything.
Oh, hello.
You're on the air, Lily. Give me a question.
Oh,
question.
Okay. My question was, how did you feel when you first came to the conclusion of near-term human extinction, and how did you go about, if you went about it at all, telling your closest family members, your wife and your parents and your siblings, if you have any?
Great question. I do have two siblings, an older brother and a younger sister. We are very close in age. There's only 35 months between the three of us. My parents were the classic example of children having children. They were very young when they had all three of us, and all five of us, my parents and my only older brother and my only younger sister, were very, very close until, just a few years ago when I left active service at the university. When I reached the conclusion that we had triggered events likely to cause our extinction by 20 or 30 or so, I was working on a book about climate change with a colleague. We were editing the book, and the book was about climate change and specifically about precipitation. And we had done a bunch of experiments, and we're doing a bunch of other observations, and so we gathered up a bunch of colleagues to write about soil water balance and the very few experiments going on at the time. The book was published in 2003, so it was written and edited largely in 2002. So at the time, we knew very little about abrupt climate change, and yet, based on editing all that information, I concluded that we were likely to cause our own extinction in the relatively near future. And my response at the time was horrible. First, I mourned for months, and nobody knew what was going on. I was a typical patriarch. I was 42, 43 years old. I thought that the world was all about me and other middle-aged Caucasian men. So I didn't reach out to anybody. Instead, I just suffered. And I felt so very alone because the relatively few people I would talk to about this thought I was insane for two reasons. One, of course we can fix climate change. Don't be silly. And, had we done things a lot differently back then, 13 years ago, maybe we could have made a difference with respect to climate change. Maybe not, too. But we didn't. And I didn't see us going in that direction. And so I felt very alone. And the few people around me who noticed couldn't figure out. They thought I was insane for reaching that conclusion, and they thought I was insane for mourning. And I was reminded of an episode from the original Star Trek series, which I saw when I was a very young lad. And in one of these episodes, there is a Vulcan ship that is blown up right there on the screen of the USS Enterprise. And Spock, the ultimate rationalist, does something to express emotion. I can't remember what it was, whether he recoiled in pain or he shed a tear of sadness or what it was, but all of the humans on the on the deck there turned and looked at him and sort of said, What? You're the rationalist. Why does that bother you? It doesn't really bother any of us. And he says, you humans, you mourn, you grieve the loss of a single individual that you know. Those were 300 of my people. And, you know, the fact that he didn't know them was sort of irrelevant. He still had this emotional response. And that's how I felt. I felt alone with the information, and I thought it bizarre that people were mourning the loss of their mother, their grandmother, their great-aunt, whatever, on a very deeply personal level, you know, after this person has had 80 years of a good life. And yet they were failing to understand how I could mourn the lost habitat and the eventual extinction of our own species. And so for the people I communicated with, it seemed so absurd. For me, it seemed even more absurd. How can you not mourn the loss of our own species when you can mourn the loss of a single individual? At that time, I hadn't had somebody close to me die since I was 11 years old. So admittedly, I was relatively new to the notion of deep loss as a result of an individual. Great question. Thank you for calling in, Lily from Arizona. And now we have a call from Barbara in Virginia. Barbara, go ahead. What's your question or comment, please?
Hi. I'm going through all of these emotions that you speak of, the loneliness, the anger, disbelief. And I'm kind of at a loss to move on. I find it astonishing that of the billions of people in the world, that only a few are aware of this. It's total denial. And yet, I'm at a loss.
Yeah.
I know you hear that often in...
Yes, no, I do hear that relatively often, and thank you for bringing it up on the radio show. I would like to address that. You know, it took me a long time to come to grips with the situation, and after I left the active service at the University of Arizona in May of 2009, essentially everybody I knew turned away from me, almost everybody I knew. Thought that I had gone crazy. In fact, there was a rumor going around that I heard from a colleague here in New Mexico that I had a rare brain disease. It was clear that I was insane. I left a six-figure job for doing essentially no work, for doing what I wanted to, for living the life of leisure in the historical sense, which is doing the work you like to do. And yet I left to go establish a homestead. Obviously, I must have been insane. So it took me a long time from 2002 until early 2014 to come to grips with the situation and to deal with the emotions associated with it. And for a long time, I didn't even know that what I was experiencing had a word. I knew that there was something gone wrong in my head, in my heart, but I couldn't even identify it. And part of that is because we're such a grief-denying culture that we don't even admit that we're going through grief. We have these myths in this culture. Big boys don't cry. Go grieve alone. That's not for the public to see. You need to take that into your own space so that the rest of us can't see you being sad, all that sort of thing. So when I completed a grief recovery workshop in January of 2014, I realized for the first time that what I was experiencing was grief. It had a word. And once I could put a word on it, it was a workshop put on by the Grief Recovery Institute. And they start by saying, we don't do grief, we do grief recovery. Well, once you have a name for it, once you call it grief, there are a series of steps you can take to make yourself emotionally more healthy. And so now I had the name for it, and one way of looking at grief is the inability to deal in a healthy manner with past relationships. So you're grieving incomplete relationships. And so here, again, I turn to all of my colleagues and almost all of my friends and family. When I left active service at the university, the relationship wasn't complete yet. And so what I was experiencing with these people is an incomplete relationship. I hadn't finished yet my relationship with them. And for the most part, I didn't have an opportunity to finish the relationship with them. It was an incomplete relationship, the likes of which many of us experience when we have a divorce or a big breakup, for example. And we never got to say a bunch of things that we wish we had said. The same when somebody dies. If you get to spend a long time with that grandparent before he or she dies, and you say everything that needs to be said in advance of their dying, then that's a complete relationship, and the grieving process is shorter and more healthy. If, on the other hand, you don't complete that process, then you're stuck. Then you have all these things that you want to say, but you can't because the relationship has dissolved. And so I was able to go through a process of completing those incomplete relationships. Largely, that was a process completed by me, for me, using my keyboard and my pieces of paper. But many people can benefit from that series of exercises. And Pauline Schneider and I, Pauline made a film about me called Going Dark, and we have recently published a book, like within the last couple of weeks, called Ms. Ladybug and Mr. Honeybee, A Love Story at the End of Time. Well, we have also developed a workshop that you can access at onlyloveremains.org, onlyloveremains.org, and you can set up a workshop so that people around you, people in your community, can complete those incomplete relationships with individuals who are unwilling to address the facts, address the evidence, or an incomplete relationship with the natural world. And a lot of people are experiencing that now as they see vegetation die, especially as we see large trees dying at a very, very rapid rate, no matter where you look. So there's a couple of tools that I might suggest for dealing with your grief, and they involve getting rid of those myths we have in this culture, coming out in public and having a workshop and dealing with people individually, or reading the Grief Recovery Handbook by the founders of the Grief Recovery Institute and adapting that information to your current case with your current people, with the natural world that surrounds you. Thanks for the great question. Let's go to Matt in Oregon. Matt, fire away. What's your question? Matt in Oregon, are you still on the air? Perhaps we've lost Matt from Oregon. Okay. We'll come back to you if you're willing to call us back. Otherwise, we're going to Suzanne in Alaska. Are you there, Suzanne?
Yeah, it's that Suzanne, yeah.
Hi, Suzanne. What question, comment, or online insult do you have to launch at me today?
Well, being up here, and we've communicated in the past, what you just said, you said a word that I use a lot about this subject, and including my life and others' lives, is shed. And it's a matter of shedding regret. You know, you face it. It's Ho'oponopono in Hawaii, I think, is where you forgive yourself for all those slights you've done in your life, whatever they are, where you've let yourself down. And you shed that skin. It's a shedding of skin. We're morphing, and we're morphing fast. So to get through this process as gently to yourself as possible is highly profitable in these last days.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, there's a Zen expression that you can't pull the skin off a snake. The snake has to shed its own skin.
Yeah.
And so some things require a little patience.
Absolutely. I have one other little thing I'd like to throw in there. I can't stay on too long, but I'll listen up. Up here, we're seeing a lot happen really fast. Everybody's still remarking how unusual and how odd, and, you know, I don't say much anymore. I used to chime right in. But nowadays, I just kind of sit back and wait and see if they're going to shed some skin right in front of me. And some do and some don't. some, you know, oh, this is what you've been talking about all this time. Or I'm sure you hear that all the time. And then others go, oh, no, 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 oh, no, no, it's just an abnormality. And they're still stuck in the abnormals, you know, and it's, yeah, you can't pull the skin off. You just can't. It's not possible.
Yeah,
what do you think about up here? Are you watching? Yeah, I know you're watching. What do you think? What am I looking at?
What you're looking at is abrupt climate change, and it's particularly obvious the closer you get to the Arctic and the closer you get from the pole. The Arctic is not the same as it was 10 years ago, not the same as it was 20 years ago. It's a completely new world that we're facing, and methane coming out of the Arctic Ocean is responsible. The Arctic has warmed more than twice as fast as the global average. So
I have a suntan this year, Guy. I'm suntan. We're always really morbidly kind of pale up here. But no, no, no. We're getting to look like natives. We're all sunburned and tan, and we look like we've been out on a boat. But we're right here in town or right here where we're doing our things. And it's so obvious, yet there are those who still can't shed that skin. The regrets are too scary for them, I guess.
Speaking of shedding skin, I would recommend you not go to those tanning salons because they're bad for you.
We don't have to anymore. The sun's been absolutely gorgeous.
You're talking about the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, just walking around in town, people are getting tanned. There are subtle little changes, and people will remark on them and totally be oblivious to connecting them up and seeing what's ahead. That's why I was asking about the methane. Is I realize it's happening up north of us, but down here our bogs are getting boggier or drier, conversely, because we've just gotten some great rain, but it's been really too warm and too dry. So there's no consistency in the change. That's why I'm asking what you think.
Right. And so one of the other factors coming into play here, and I hear this a lot from people all over the planet, actually, they say the sun is more intense than it used to be.
Yes, it is.
That's because the ozone is going away, that protective ozone. You know, we heard since, the early 1980s about the ozone hole in the Antarctic. Well, it's not just in the Antarctic. And so it provides a protective shield. And it's disintegrating various places around the globe. So it seems hotter outside, and the sun seems more intense because it is hotter outside, and the sun is more intense. There's less of a buffer.
Well, thank you. We sit out on the porch overlooking Prince William Sound and enjoying this beautiful place we're in and cooking, literally cooking and looking at each other and saying, wait a minute, we don't remember feeling it like this. And I feel like a canary, and I'll chirp as much as I can, but it's definitely happening faster, Guy, definitely. And I'll
thank
let you,
you
go
for calling
now.
In.
Thank you.
Man, I appreciate it. Now we're going to go to Matt. Matt from Oregon is back with us. Matt, you're on the air.
How you doing, Guy? You were talking about the Arctic earlier, in your previous call, but what I've noticed is, I don't know if anyone else has noticed yet in the those who actually are looking at the Antarctic, and I know the Antarctic is as much of a feedback loop as everything else, but I've also noticed just by clicking on it accidentally that almost seems like the Antarctica right now seems to have stopped making ice, or is it plateauing right now? Is that something that was expected in those who are studying climate change right now?
That's a great question. As usual, the common phrases in the climate science community continue to be faster than expected and, wow, how unusual. And so, no, not so long ago that was not anticipated to occur. And, in fact, in some places, the Antarctic is adding relatively thin ice because of snowfall and ice accumulation, especially this time of the year. But in other places, you know, we have the Lassen B, the Lassen C, and Lassen A, B, and C ice shelves. Those are big masses that have been in collapse and have, in the case of A, has largely collapsed. And so So we're seeing these huge ice shelves, and when they go, they take a lot of ice with them, and they open the door to considerably more ice being driven into the ocean on the heels. And this is a real concern. James Hansen and colleagues have a paper out recently about how much sea level rise we can expect from that in the near future. And it's a lot. You know, they conservatively say 10 feet sea level rise. I think that's really quite conservative given the amount of ice we're talking about. And this is land ice that's going to go into the ocean. This is not surface ice like we have in the Arctic. You know, the ice in the Arctic is floating. So when it melts, it doesn't contribute to sea level rise. But when Greenland and Antarctica, when they melt and contribute their ice, that actually contributes to sea level rise. So that's a completely different animal than what's going on in the Arctic. Thanks for the question, Matt. We have Chris from Virginia on the air. Chris, are you still with us?
Hi, Guy. It's Chris from West Virginia. And I just wanted to call in, and I saw you in New York, got to meet, introduce you to my daughter, and that was fantastic in February. And I just wanted to call in and say hi and say thank you, and you're as usual, hitting on everything. I'm signed up myself for a grief workshop over a weekend with a local, study group here, which should be fantastic. And can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Go on.
And that was it. I mean, basically, just thank you for doing what you're doing. I'm trying to do what I can do here and just hang in there. And the grief workshop, I'm really looking forward to being able to process. It's just to process this. It's such a continuous process, and I keep processing, and it keeps getting more intense. So, thanks.
Well, thank you, Chris. I appreciate your call in, and I'm sorry I don't recall meeting you and your daughter in New York, but that's, as I indicated at the top of the show, my brain is two sizes too small, so that's my excuse for almost everything that doesn't come out of my mouth, that goes through my brain. Yes, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about the grief recovery process since you brought it up. Yeah, you know, when somebody has a piece of shrapnel or a nail or some piece of metal that inadvertently landed beneath their skin, we know what it takes to get it out. We know that you have to dig in there and that at least initially it's going to be quite painful. But that has to be done, or you're going to get that twinge of pain, you're going to have the potential for infection setting in and so forth. So if you want to get that pain resolved, you have to dig around in there, open it up, and spray a bunch of water, saline in there, and clean it out. So that's what it takes to actually heal a wound on your body. And it's the same for your heart. When you have a loss, a source of grieving, an incomplete relationship that is damaging your heart, you can't just allow the scar tissue to build up over the top of it. That doesn't heal it. Time heals all wounds is an absolute falsehood. That's one of the myths of grieving. I've seen people cry openly, abundantly, uncontrollably 25 years after a parent died because time does not heal all wounds. What you have to do is you have to go in there and dig into your heart and expose that grief to the light of day, expose that relationship and clean it out, and then allow it to heal. That's hard. That's going to be very painful in the early stages of exposing the wound. But ultimately, that's how you come out the other side. That's how you resolve grief or an incomplete relationship is the same way you resolve a physical wound somewhere on your body. So thanks for that comment. We have Barbara calling back from Virginia. Barbara, fire away.
Hi,
Hi. I want to also thank you for what you've done, been doing. Just want to say that when people say that they need to take accountability for their own participation in the contribution, my father was a person who invented container shipping, and that's what keeps coming to my mind about how the development of society has just snowballed. And I think recently, being a grandmother and 71 years old and living our full life, that I'm still flabbergasted. I'm on the radio, and I just want to thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Barbara. I very much appreciate your sentiments. And if you want to come on the air to thank me, you can have an hour every month or so on this program, because there's nothing I'd rather do than be thanked for all that time. No, you're absolutely right. The so-called development of the planet, as indicated by cargo containers, by shipping containers, as indicated by the exponential growth in computing power within our lifetimes, is absolutely astonishing. And of course, the bill's going to come due. Of course, at some point, we have to pay the piper. You can't have infinite growth on a finite planet of any kind. We can't have it with respect to the human population. We can't have it with respect to the monetary situation. We can't have it with respect to cargo containers and smartphones and every other aspect of this contemporary life that we just take for granted at this point. We're the most connected, the most hyper-connected society to ever exist. And I look at college campuses now and the students on college campuses, and that wave had really just begun when I left active service about 6.5 years ago. But now it is astonishingly obvious that young people in particular have to feel connected to their friends, acquaintances, colleagues, the digital world, whatever it is they're connected to. They have to feel it that way all the time. That's a completely different world than the one I grew up in and that most of us grew up in. And, of course, it's amazing. It's amazing in a positive way, and, of course, it's going to be amazing in a negative way as well. Again, you can't have something for nothing. The piper must be paid. We cannot get something for nothing. I recognize that for the most part that's the American dream, getting something for nothing, and hoping, wishing for getting everything for nothing. That's the American dream, but there are costs. There are costs to the way we live. It costs other people their lives, their livelihoods. Mostly these are people we don't see because the media hides them from us and the government goes along. But if it weren't for mass death in Africa and the Middle East, we wouldn't have the oil and the fossil energy that allows us to have this conversation. If we didn't have people jumping out of buildings in China to create the technology that allows most of us to make our phone calls every day, if we didn't have the military, if we didn't have the means to force that set of living arrangements on other people, then we wouldn't have all these amazing wonders that we've come to take for granted. It's a double-edged sword, and technology isn't energy, as so many people have pointed out, from James Howard Kunstler to Chris Martinson to any number of people who write and speak about fossil energy and particularly peak oil. Energy is not technology, and technology is not energy. You can't have something for nothing. If we're going to ship those shipping containers around the globe, it's not going to be because we have smartphones. If we're going to continue to have food show up at the grocery store, it's not going to be because of the smartphones. If we're going to continue to have water come through the taps, it's not because of the smartphones. What we ultimately depend upon, of course, is a living planet to sustain us. And a lot of us lose track of that as we go about our daily lives. As we go about lives that have us driving from suburbia to the grocery store to get food, from suburbia to the office complex where we work downtown, and so on. Well, we take all that for granted. We have for a long time. We also have the interstate highway system in this country that allows us to go long distance in a relatively short period of time. All that costs, and the costs are largely hidden, and once the costs are exposed, it's a whole new world. It's a whole new awakening, at least it was for me. And in my case, I could no longer keep living the way I was living before, and that decision has come with its own set of costs as well. Perhaps I should have thought about that a little more. You know what I like to say about that? Mistakes have been made. And I'm not talking about the recent book that's out, Mistakes Have Been Made, But Not By Me. That's a book about cognitive dissonance. I recognize that many of the mistakes for the way my life has turned out have come at my own expense. So it's pretty interesting that people are using their digital devices, I think, so they can feel connected. I think so they can feel some empathy or at least some sympathy from other human beings. And if somebody had given them the choice 1 year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe even today, they would have chosen a living planet. But we didn't give them that choice. I'm a late-in baby boomer, and my generation, the worst in history, didn't give the younger generation a choice to have a living planet. We stole that from them. So here we are, having stolen the future from people, and now, no big surprise, we no longer have a future. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you for calling in. From my perspective, this has been a great show. I appreciate all the call-ins. You really saved me on this one. And I look forward to the next time. Be sure to catch us in the Facebook groups, Progressive Radio, Nature Bats Blast on the Progressive Radio Network. The Facebook group that you can join is Nature Bats Blast at prn.fm. And stay tuned to my blog, guymcpherson.com, for updates about speaking tours, workshops, and so on. You can also contact me through that website, guymcpherson.com. The dominant clever has been very clever, but as we all know at this point, in the end, nature bats last.
Gonna get you.